Hey, everybody. Welcome back to One Club Short Podcast. It is officially NFL weekend, which I know for a lot of our listeners, it's exciting. For me, it is the start of the football season to me, which is the start of fall. Love it. Love fall golf. Love the NFL. Love college football. So this is to me probably one of my favorite times of the year. You still got some warm weather. You got some, you know, sports just around the clock. Golf is wrapping up a little bit with the Ryder Cup in a week or so. You got this is a lot going on, and I am so pumped. We had our first game tonight, NFL game tonight, with the Chiefs and the Lions. We'll talk about some picks in a little bit, but. With that said, I think we're going to start with the Ryder Cup selections, because there was a lot of beef. More so, I mean, I guess every year there's a little bit of something. This seemed to be a lot of emotion wrapped up in some really interesting articles as soon as the Ryder pick selections were made, talking about more about the boys club, talking about, you know, the in and the out crowd. And, you know, we should address the fact that, you know, is that something that needs to happen to have a successful team? Because we've seen it before where the Europeans don't necessarily have the top 50 players, you know, going out, but they put together a team that loves to play together. They get along. They're drinking before the match or after the match, whatever the heck they want to do. But they seem to be in sync the whole time, where we've put teams together with the top 10 players on there and they just hate each other. So what's that balance? Is this selection process working? Does it seem, have the Americans seem to have figured it out, where it's not all about rankings and it's more about partnerships and strengths of players and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's a great point of debate. And I do think you feel bad for folks that really have worked their butts off this year and should have made the team technically, but just didn't make the cut for one reason or another. And I think, you know, let's start there and then head right back into, you know, finish up with some fun football talk.
Yeah, let's dive into it. So the Ryder Cup teams have been picked. We can start with the U.S. The guys who made it on points, Scottie Scheffler, Wyndham Clark, Brian Harman, Patrick Cantlay, Max Homa, Xander Schauffele. You see that, you go, okay, that makes sense. Obviously, as it always is with the Ryder Cup, you get into the captain's picks, and the captain's picks are what got weird. So, U.S. captain's picks, Colin Morikawa, Ricky Fowler, Sam Burns, Jordan Spieth, Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas. Again, none of those names sound crazy, but then you take a look. Wait a second. And he didn't get picked. Wait a second. Keegan was 11th in points and he didn't get picked. Wait a second. Justin Thomas was 15th and you put him on the team over Lucas Glover, who's basically hotter than any player on the planet right now. Played some great golf this year. You didn't pick Tony Finau, who has won 4 times since the last Ryder Cup. Look, I think it's a long time before we can say that the U.S. has figured out anything with respect to the Ryder Cup, especially without them winning in Europe again. I think the team's good, but Glenn, I take a look at that group of Cam Young, Keegan Bradley, Lucas Glover, Tony Finau, and Russell Henley, who got left off the team. And I don't even think you have to call out any of the captain's picks in particular, but what was your reaction to those guys being left off? Because if you had told me that group was going 0-5 on getting selected, I would have told you were crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, we had this discussion in the past few weeks that this was going to be very controversial, these last two picks. In my mind, I wouldn't have taken JT and I wouldn't have taken Burns. I get, you know, JT's part of the boys club. I get that. Burns is, I think he's Scottie Scheffler's best friend. So that may have been a little bit of a, you know, Scotty may have been, you know, advocating for him. But I just think it's crazy to leave off Keegan Bradley and Lucas Glover. They played so well. They're veterans. They can be a steadying force should things go south for this team at some point. I think that's a miss. And, you know, I get it. Like, we're talking about the boys club, and we always said that, you know, Europe's so tight because they bring the same players to every Ryder Cup. We should do that. Well, now we're doing it and everybody's up in arms. So I guess, you know, on paper, to me, these teams look so evenly matched. The top halves are pretty solid and the back halves are question marks. So we're going to find out which captain made the right picks. I think it's going to come down to the captain's picks are going to decide this Ryder Cup one way or the other. And it might be good. It might be bad.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta think,
Craig, what did you think?
Well, you just gotta think that, man, if you're the captain and this is the way you're going, you better be right. Because, you know, you get this shot maybe once in a lifetime. If you're a golfer, you don't want to be the captain that's, oh yeah, I picked a bunch of my buddies in the team, whatever. We went over to Europe and got absolutely smacked around. It's such a bad look for you. It's a bad look for the country. You know, I don't know. It's tough. Cause again, well, you're right. You look at the names and you think it's fine. Like how do you not pick JT in match play? It's just, you know, he's one of the best that's, you know, been around in the last 15 years. So if that's the case, hopefully he rises to the occasion. He figures out his demons with, you know, whatever's going wrong with his game, and he plays great. In reality, it's not the best pick. I mean, to leave Keegan Bradley off right now, of all the guys that are out, I think Keegan's the one that's got the biggest gripe, because not only did he win twice this year, but he played great in the FedEx Cup, was right in the thick of it all. He's a guy that, you know, could be part of the boys club if he really wanted to. He's just a little bit of a, you know, a little bit on the outside, so I get it. But he's young enough, he's exciting enough, and he's playing really well. I think he's, of all the folks there that were primed to be on this team, he's the one that I think has got the biggest gripe. So, I don't know, just you better be right. It's all I'm saying. You're not going to get a chance to look back on this thing and second guess yourself. It's too late. So,
yeah. That's a lot of pressure too, and JT, right?
Yeah.
Because they're the controversial picks, the most controversial, all of them. I wouldn't want to be those guys going into this. I mean, they're going into Europe, going to hostile territory. They're going to get heckled. And if your game's not on, it's really going to get exposed.
Yeah, your little quirks are going to be massive holes in your game right now. So we'll see.
And we didn't even get into Dustin Johnson. Look, is he playing the best golf in the world? Absolutely not. But he's got more Ryder Cup match wins than anyone on the U.S. team. Patrick Reed has more Ryder Cup match wins than anyone on the U.S. team except Jordan Spieth. Bryson DeChambeau, you know, not the world's greatest Ryder Cup player, but a guy we've seen be at the top of the game of golf in recent years. We didn't even get to those guys. It's crazy to me the number of possible avenues that Zach Johnson had to go with these picks. And I get, you know, he's talking about JT being the emotional leader or whatever. And look, man, I think you guys nailed it. You got to be right, because, you know, Sam Burns, terrific golfer. Justin Thomas, terrific golfer. For different reasons between the, I think you can seriously question those picks. And maybe the rest of the team plays so well that ends up not mattering. Maybe those guys kind of break through and show up. But yeah, it's an interesting time to be Zach Johnson. And then certainly it only kind of gets weirder with the European team, right? Like, I look at that team, and obviously the crazy one is Ludvig Åberg, who like a few months ago was playing college tournaments. But like, Craig, I'll go to you on this one first. How do you make sense of the bottom half of that roster? Because you guys have both made reference to it. The European team is always punching above its weight in the Ryder Cup, especially at home. And my default going into September 28th or whenever this gets started is the U.S. is going to find a way to get smacked. because that's just the way the Ryder Cup in Europe works, as far as I'm concerned. But then I look at the back half of this team, and I'm like, am I really supposed to be scared of that? Like, where am I right? Where am I wrong about that, Craig?
No, I agree. It's kind of weird. Like, the front half is so dominant. But I think right now the stable folks to choose from just falls off a cliff, right? You can go the old guard that have all gone to live for the most part. But I think there's a lot more animosity on that side. And I think Rory's been at the forefront of that, causing that animosity. Where I think the U.S. could take it or leave it with DJ or Brooks or even Bryson to a certain degree. But, you know, I think if they came back to the PGA tomorrow, they would just kind of fit right in, and bygones would be bygones almost. I think in the European team, there is that animosity that's still creeping in, and a little bit more of a, I just don't want them on my team type of, like, they chose their path, let them go, except for Rom. And I don't think Victor has an enemy in the world. So, but I think with Rory there, I think he's going to make sure that line in the sand is there and saying, you know what, we'll go find some young blood and bring them up, and we'll nurture them to the point where we're getting the Ryder Cup team ready for the next 4 years, you know, 8 years, whatever it is. They can come under our tutelage and they'll be ready to take over the mantle when the time is right. So I think that's probably the route they went. Historically, Europe's been better at that than we have, as far as like picking some dark horses that come in and all of a sudden get a lot of points, or do just enough to keep them in the match or get some points where needed. Than the U.S. has done. But I got to think that's the route you go. And to leave Poulter and Sergio and those guys off the list, again, you better be right. Because if nothing else, those guys are all battle-tested. You know, they love the excitement of the Ryder Cup, and they all seem to rise to the occasion when they need to. So it's an interesting choice. It's an interesting look for the European team. I was surprised to not see Matty Fitzpatrick's brother on there, just for the sake of other. But you know, if we're going the friend route, like, hey, who plays better with Matty than his brother?
And frankly, if you're going to put Robert McIntyre, who is ranked 129th in the world by Data Golf, which is 70 spots lower than anyone else playing in the Ryder Cup, like, yeah, I feel like you could take the other Fitzpatrick at that.
Yeah, why not? What has he got to lose? Yeah. Probably been playing for one day anyway in the singles, right? So.
Yeah, I think when I look at these lists and I see, you know, Sergio, Poulter, Casey, Westwood, DJ, Patrick Reed, I think you left off gamers, and I think the Ryder Cup is going to lose a little bit because of that. I mean, these guys are so good. They come to play, especially in the Ryder Cup, and they live for it, and now they're sitting home, but all because, you know, I think Rory's voice is so big.
But it's interesting, right? Like, DJ is the one name of all of them. But, you know, I get the Keegan Bradley stuff because he's hot. But if you're looking at the JT route, Will, you talked about the stats from DJ earlier. They're super impressive. I mean, he was the man of steel at the last Ryder Cup. And it didn't really matter who you put with him. He was the guy that would be aggressive and hit it long. And then they'd throw Morikawa with him for, you know, for one of the matches. And he'd, you know, be the one that was, you know, super precise. So you can almost pair him up with anybody when the time is right. Now, I get it. Like, when him and Brooks played together a couple of years ago, it didn't go so well. But I think the whole dynamic of that Ryder Cup team was destined to fail. But if you go off of recent history, DJ's a really tough one to leave off. Now, where he didn't do himself any favors, he's just not playing great. I mean, he's not playing great in LIV standards. So I don't know how you make that leap. But if you're going to do it for JT, you've got to at least consider a DJ. Or Bryson, who actually is playing pretty well right now. It's just, I don't know. I understand why they did it. It just does raise a lot of red flags. So, God bless them. You know, I still hope that these guys come through and they look dominant, but it's not going to be a walk in the park like they thought it would be, you know, last time the Ryder Cup finished up.
Yeah, at the end of the day, one of these captains would be a lot of explaining to do, you know.
Yeah, I need to amend my statement. Robert McIntyre made it on points. So good for him. Maybe Europe, take a look at how you do your points, but
are they using the metric?
He will not be held against as a captain's pick. Exactly. So I think one thing maybe the last thing that sticks out to me is there is not, with the exception of maybe Justin Rose, I think you can make the argument for Justin Rose, there is not an elite Ryder Cup player participating in this tournament. Like, Rory is a career 12-12-4 guy. Justin Rose, I think the reasonable captain's pick, the connection to the Sergios and Poulters of the world on the prior European Ryder Cup teams, is 13-8-2. They're the only guys playing in this Ryder Cup with more than 10 match wins to their name ever. And they're the only two guys on the European team with more than 4. Now, the U.S. team is largely filled with guys with either very little Ryder Cup experience or who are not super impressive in the Ryder Cup. But Glenn, to your point about maybe not necessarily some of the juice being taken out of the tournament, because obviously these guys care, there is a generation of extremely good Ryder Cup players who we are not going to see. And I think an interesting narrative to follow is, do any of these guys separate themselves as that next group of match play killers? Or are we going to see a more balanced tournament just based on the fact that none of these guys really present that way?
You know, you never know in the Ryder Cup, someone always jumps up and plays great. But I think we're going to see just a solid Ryder Cup, evenly matched. But at the end of the day, the Ryder Cup needs bad guys. And Poulter's a bad guy. Sergio's a bad guy for us. And the Europeans look at a lot of the American players and they, that's a bad guy. That drives interest. That drives fire. That drives everything that makes this event so great. So I think, like I said, I think because of politics, we're missing out on making a good event that could have been great. You know what I mean?
Especially in Europe. You want those bad guys in Europe to be, get the, you know, the crowd riled up and,
yeah,
you know, USA sucks chance, which, you know, if they did that, we're going to war. But I mean, I get it. It's a, it's their time. But yeah, I agree with it. Not having those personalities, like, this is not a time for everyone to be nice and huggy kissy, right? This is a time to get emotional and, you know, really get angry at your opponent, because I think that's what drives the audience in this kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what we love about this event.
Yeah.
The fire. And it's like right now, as you're looking at that, it's lacking, may have talent, but it's lacking personalities.
Yep.
I still can't get over that Ludvig Åberg, who just got his first big professional win at the Omega European Masters, which I think solidified his spot on the team, literally played in his last college tournament on May 29th. He turned pro in June and is now on a Ryder Cup team. That, like, that people don't do that. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, how to put it in perspective. Plenty of journalists have done it better than I am right now, but, like, that is ridiculous. And who knows, like, maybe he goes out there and gets housed, but you know what? He's going to be 25 years old the next time the Ryder Cup comes around. Like, this guy could be a problem for a while.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's no better way to get experience in a Ryder Cup, you know, without actually doing it. Right? And I think anyone that's played in it will probably tell you that. It's just, you know, you do 1,000 tournaments and you're not really nervous about coming off the first tee box anymore because you've done it so many times. I think the Ryder Cup is a totally different animal. So regardless of your age or experience, I think you got to do it once or twice to really say, yep, this is, now I know what to expect. Right.
And this is the big thing that sucks about Will Zalatoris not being able to play in either of the last two Ryder Cups. Like, that's the type of guy who you want to get this experience. And I feel like the U.S. has leaned that direction. And now the next time the Ryder Cup comes around, he's going to be 29 years old, like, before any of us know it, which is insane.
Yeah. I wish Will Zalatoris was playing, because I want to know over under on number of putts given to Will Zalatoris.
Oh my God.
Maybe three, maybe.
You'd be that guy that you bring to the member guests that no one's giving putts because they know they can't make it. And all of a sudden, he's like breaking clubs over his knee at the end.
That guy's been me lately. So there's an interesting article that went up on golf.com about the story of Sepp Straka, who was born to an American mother in Austria. Lived in Austria until he was about 14 years old, moved back to Georgia, has lived in the U.S. for much of his life. If you talk to the guy, clearly sounds like, you know, he's a down-home kind of guy. He could have, by the rules of international golf, played for either Ryder Cup team. He, in international competition, has always elected to play for Europe. And it raises an interesting question, which is, your Sepp Straka, which team would you rather be on? Let's put aside the fact that he may not have qualified for the U.S. team, may not have gotten picked. Which team, Glenn, would you rather be on?
You know, this is the first one I'll say, it's a coin toss. I don't know which team I'd rather be on. You know, he's very open about how he feels, just as American as he is Austrian. And, you know, I'd never heard of him until, you know, before when he won the Honda, I think, in 2022. And I'm like, oh, this guy's from Austria. And then he spoke. I'm like, no, this guy's from Mississippi. You know,
exactly.
Like, this guy is not Austrian. This doesn't sound like Hans and Franz going to pump you up. This guy is down home country. But yeah, it's always an interesting, like, you know, Rory McIlroy faces the same thing in the Olympics. Although I like Sepp Straka is saying, like, I feel equally American and equally Austrian, whereas Rory's just like, I've always played for Ireland, but I feel more British. But at the end of the day, I'm not patriotic. And it's like, well, there's another bad answer, Rory. I get it, you're honest, but man, sometimes just make something up to make yourself sound somewhat human.
Yeah, you almost have to take the patriotism out of this question, because you always want to play for the American team, represent the flag and whatever. And I do think there's a fun group of guys that are playing. So I don't know anyone that would turn down that opportunity. But more so than any other European Ryder Cup that I can remember on hand, to me, this would be a fun one to play with, right? Just playing with, getting a chance to play with Rahm or Hovland, you know, some of the guys. I think Hovland's just one of the greatest guys on tour right now. Just his personality, his drive, the way he handles everything, his answer of like, hey, you just want all this money, what are you going to do? And he's like, oh, I don't know, I think I'm going to start getting guac on my Chipotle. Which is like, what a great answer from a, you know, young 20-something-year-old, you know, golfer on top of the world, being like, not I'm getting a new car or house, whatever, but yeah, I just want guac on my chips, like, more than anything else. It's just, all right, I get it. So I'd still probably choose the U.S. team by far, only because of the patriotism and you know, the love the guys that did get selected. But, man, this is probably the closest I'd ever get to wanting to be part of that European team, just because the group that's there, that top five.
To me, yeah. I think
– I got to say, I've just forgot, you know, because I think I told you guys the story of how we snuck into the European – team's party after the last Ryder Cup in Wisconsin, and I saw Dane Lowry drinking. Man, he's sitting there having a conversation with a guy, and he's got a Guinness in his hand, and he's just sipping on it, and then someone hands him another Guinness, he just chugs it, hands a glass back, goes to the conversation, sipping his other Guinness. I'd want to play for Europe.
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer's pretty obviously that you'd want to play for Europe, because I think we'd all want to win the Ryder Cup. And until the U.S. shows me that they can win a Ryder Cup in Europe, like, I mean, that's where this Ryder Cup is. So makes it pretty easy for me.
Wouldn't you want to be the first team in a long, long time to do that? I mean, just like, you want to be part of that squad, right? So if you think this team's got a chance, you got to believe in it.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast about Warren Buffett, I promise this connects, and they were talking about how for so much of his life he would never invest in tech stocks, and he would say things like, I have to see a tech company make $100 million in profit before I think a tech company can make $100 million in profit. I certainly not in my conscious memory, maybe not in my lifetime, has a U.S. Ryder Cup team won the Ryder Cup not in the U.S. So I'm going to take Warren Buffett's stance. I got to see it happen to believe that it could happen. I don't care if I think this team should be the -500 favorite. Like, it's just got to happen.
Will, I also remember an undefeated New England team coming into Giant Stadium. actually, it wasn't Giant Stadium. Coming into the Super Bowl.
It wasn't Giant.
With people already buying T-shirts of undefeated seasons and hats. And there he was, little Eli Manning. Nobody believed him. Took down the biggest guy in NFL history. Sometimes you just got to believe it. Do it, Will.
I think people who watched the Week 17 game where the Giants did almost basically won. Everything but beat the Patriots understood that that game was not a foregone conclusion. But
I do believe there's a lot of people in Boston that do not believe that at all.
Yeah, but I don't give much credence to the point of views of Boston sports fans.
That sounded a little biased. Wow. I agree.
It's true. I mean, I'll tell it like it is. As a Patriots fan myself, like, I think there are a lot of really dumb Boston sports fans. There might be more really dumb New York sports fans, but that might just be because New York is, you know, the bigger city. Like, who knows how the proportions actually work out?
Yeah, I think it's hard to say that there are not dumb sports fans across any local bandwidth, because otherwise, why bother?
That's fair. That's fair. I had the newest Duke football fan actually texted me this week and told me that that Duke was better than Notre Dame. That was interesting.
I mean, when I sent you that text, it was close. By the end of the game, it's not even close anymore.
No, I think Clemson accomplished maybe the wildest feat that I can remember in college football, or just one of the more ridiculous distinctions. In the second half of that game, they didn't punt and they didn't score.
Yeah.
It's like almost impossible to do that.
You know, I was talking to my little guy about this when we were watching it, and I said, you know what the hard part is? Clemson season's over. These kids came to Clemson with the ambition of winning a national championship, thinking, all right, hey, we may have a rough go against Duke, but we're going to win this game, right? Like, all this stuff, all this buildup and work that they've done, basically within one game, first game of the season, gone, right? I mean, we've seen it before. Michigan's tried that before, too, with picking out an easy team a couple of years ago and losing to, was it, like, Appalachia State or whatever it was. And it was just like, man, imagine going to that big school, foregoing everything else, and this is the route you're going to go. First game of your senior or junior season where you're trying to put on a show to get drafted, and it's over. And it just – it sucks. I mean, yeah, great for Duke. Obviously, I'm not a Duke football fan, except for Danny Dimes. I could care less about anything that comes out of Duke. But it was great to see the underdog not just hang around. Same with Colorado last week. I mean, not just hang around, but – hang around and win in pretty solid fashion from both. I mean, the Colorado one was obviously a lot closer, but they deserved it. There wasn't, that was not a fluke. They got some real talent on that team. And I haven't seen a group turn around like that in such a short time ever. And, you give Deion a lot of credit for that. And who knows how far they'll be able to go, but they've got some weapons on that team. And I guess this is where the portal really comes into play, because you'd never be able to reload a team like that in 1 year without the transfer portal. So I think college football is in a pretty darn good place right now. And as crummy as the rest of the games were, because they were all blowouts, there was a lot of really fun, good highlights from each one of those games, just spectacular plays and whatever. So as the season goes on, there's going to be some really awesome competition, I think. So
Florida State LSU was a good storyline.
Florida State was great. Yeah. LSU is, again, same thing. I think they were like, oh man, we're playing the FSU from the last 3 years. And they are not the same as FSU as last 3 years. They looked really good. They got some talent on that team too. And again, LSU, they're not dumb, because that's at least you're losing to a more reputable team and you can fight your way back and say, I think losing to a Duke who is inherently, I know they did okay last year, but they inherently have not been in, the top 25 for a long, long time, if ever, so that's tough to rebound from if you're Clemson.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Clemson and Duke both end up doing. I think, I know the Bill Connolly's, S&P Plus or SP Plus metric basically said, if you were to simulate that game a bunch of times, Duke would have an 86% or 84% chance of winning based on just the way things went. I do think you you wouldn't expect that every time Clemson gets into the red zone for the rest of the season, they're going to forget how to hold on to the football.
Yeah.
So I think, like, you know, you kind of wonder how much they gave away the game and how much Duke went and got it. But I think you're right. Like, when you're the underdog and you have a chance to pull off a big upset, you have to take advantage of every inch that you are given. And Duke did that in a way that I think a lot of lesser teams may not have and would have let Clemson back into the game.
Every time Duke needed a big play because Clemson was on the move, they got it. Again, to your point, I don't know if it's just dumb luck or whatever, but I mean, there were hats on footballs every time. And then just someone in the right spot to scoop it up and secure the, you know, but it wasn't just that. Then they were able to drive down the field and score, right? You can't just get those fumbles and then three and out, punt it back, and eventually Clemson will come back. They were able to march down the field and score when they needed to score too. So you got to give them a ton of credit for the things that they pulled off. They pulled off and then they were able to step on them when they needed to really step on them. Like even that last 6 minutes of the game, right? There was a chance that Clemson could have done a couple of things and gone back into it. Instead, Duke goes down the field and they score one more time and it's over. And it's just
Clemson was, I think, and it takes a lot for me to say something empathetic to Clemson. I think they were probably the victim of one of the worst calls that we will see in college football this year. When Klubnik slid short of a first down on fourth down, got targeted, and then the rule was because the play technically ended when he slid, the targeting would be enforced, but not from the end of the run. Like, that's an insane rule. Because if it's a late hit, the defender obviously thinks the hit is happening or obviously thinks the hit is happening during the play. So, like, how are you going to say that it's after the play? It was ridiculous.
You knew the, you knew the call was going to go to their benefit when the coach from Duke takes off his headgear and he's ready to yell at the ref, and the ref's like, relax, this is going to be all right for you. And he's like, oh, okay, and he backed away. No more targeting argument. No more just like, hey, we're getting the ball back. This is fine. Like, all good.
Nothing else matters.
Yeah.
So, first weekend of the NFL. None of our teams are in action today, but they'll play on Sunday and Monday. That we put on our agenda. Giants host the Cowboys on Sunday night. We have Bills at Jets on Monday night. We have my New England Patriots hosting the Eagles in what could be the worst home loss in Patriots history. And we have my adopted Baltimore Ravens hosting the Texans. Craig, with the Giants first on our list, retooled the offense. I think everyone believes had a really good draft. Kept Saquon. What are you expecting to see on Sunday? How do you see this going?
I think if the O line holds up, it's kind of old story for the Giants. If the O line holds up, and I love the center they got. If Evan Neal can do his part, the guards are playing a little bit better. If the O line holds up, we're going to be in this thing to the very end. It's not going to be a blowout. It's not going to, in my opinion, it's not going to be a blowout on either side. It's not going to be the Giants getting run over, because I think the talent that the Giants were able to pick up in the offseason filled a lot of holes that they, you know, even the Isaiah Simmons pickup that they just had, they are surrounded by speed and athleticism and a Wink Martindale defense, which is going to just come out guns blazing. And I think if the two new rookie cornerbacks hold up on defense and the two and the right side of the offensive line hold up, Giants are going to be tough to deal with this year, because they may not have the A.J. Browns of the, you know, on their team, the A.J. Browns of the world on their team, but they've got a lot of really good receiving talent. And they've got Darren Waller, who's essentially going to be treated like a wide receiver one. So Saquon hasn't even been playing yet. I mean, they are all healthy, ready to go. It's going to be a dogfight, and I'm excited for it. I mean, it's just, this game can't happen soon enough, in my opinion. If they get blown out, I'm going to be super disappointed. I think they're so much better than what they were last year.
Line is Cowboys by 3.5 right now.
Yeah, that's probably right. You know, I mean, only in the sense that they should be. They had a better record last year. Look, they picked up some weapons with Cook, and Dak's supposed to be healthier, even though he's thrown 82 interceptions in the preseason. But, you know, until the Giants beat them, just like you're saying in the Ryder Cup, Giants haven't beat the Cowboys in an opening day game in the last 5 or 6 years. So until they do that, they should be the underdogs. But it shouldn't – it's not anything more than 3, 3.5, I think, is crazy.
Do you have a message to the haters to say that the Giants are one of the prime candidates for regression in the league because, sure, they won a bunch of games last year, but they had a negative point differential, a lot of close wins? Any message to those people?
Yeah, you're idiots. All of you. Every one of you are absolute idiots. I don't know how else to say it. You obviously don't know anything about professional football. Yeah, Giants are gonna be great this year. Now, the only reason they really may regress is the NFC East is going to be super competitive. But if they stay healthy, I think they're a much better team than they were last year. And it's a second year in a defensive system and an offensive system that I think does really well. I think they're going to be fine. They're going to do great this year.
Glenn, you have the Bills going to the Meadowlands on Monday night to face the new look New York Jets. I think you were at this game last year.
Yep.
Bills are favored by 2.5. I don't think we really know what we have. And what are you thinking about this one?
I think this is the game where whichever team loses, the fan base is going to think the sky is falling. You really want to win this one. I give, you know, if you go down the line, I give the QB edge to the Bills. I just think Josh is better than Aaron Rodgers. I give the running backs the edge to the Jets. I think the receivers are pretty much equal. I think the defenses are equal. The Jets probably have a better pass rush. I think the Bills have a little bit better secondary, even with Sauce Gardner. It comes down, like Craig was saying with the Giants, comes down to O-line and which team has the best of a bad O-lines. Battle of two bad O-lines. Let's see who comes up on top. So give those – whichever O-line can give their quarterback a little bit of time. Josh isn't scrambling and running for his life, and Aaron Rodgers isn't getting, you know, his head ripped off. Whichever O-line can give that quarterback the extra half second to a second is going to win.
Glenn, is Von Miller back?
No, he's on the pop list. So I think he's got 4 weeks until he's back. He says he can play. I think there's being extra cautious, which is the smart thing to do. You know, I look at their schedule. If they beat the Jets, I think they go the first 4 weeks. They're probably going to go 4-0. It's not a brutal schedule. Worst, they're going to go 3-1. So keep him healthy and get him back for the heart of the schedule, which comes after like week 5.
That brings us to Patriots hosting the Eagles. I don't know how this game is only the Eagles by 4. Maybe I'm jaded from the last couple years in the post Tom Brady era, but maybe the Patriots defense is better than I'm giving it credit for. I haven't seen this team show any promise on offense. I don't think Mac Jones has shown anyone anything to believe in. I know they went out and got a couple guys, but you can't tell me Devontae Parker is a valid wide receiver one in the 2023 NFL. And the Eagles are just so good. Like, people are talking about Super Bowl hangovers and whatever, which I don't think even exists if you didn't win the Super Bowl, but people are still talking about how the loser of the Super Bowl does this and that, whatever. I'd be shocked if the Patriots even kept this competitive. And I'd be shocked if the Texans keep it competitive in Baltimore. I got Zay Flowers going off for the Ravens. Love that pick. Zay Flowers and Jalen Hyatt are my two rookie receivers this year, and I very excited about them. Craig, yeah. I understand Jack, our football expert, made some picks.
Yeah, him and his friend Ryan, they put their heads together, and without the spread, just to try and keep it a little bit simplified, they like Kansas City tonight, which I disagree with. I think Detroit's going to come out and win.
Really?
Yeah. I think especially if Kelsey's not playing. I think this is a year that Kansas City may regress just enough, right? They're losing some – they've got some big names on defense that are missing right now. If Kelsey's not in there, I mean, I think even as great as Mahomes is, it's at some point you need that outlet. But they'll still be great.
Detroit on the road is a bold pick.
Yeah, I think Detroit's an upcoming team, though. I think if they really can play to their level of talent that they have, I think Detroit's a tough knockout. So I think that they went with Detroit. I'm sorry, they went with KC. I went with Detroit. They said Giants. They loved the Bills. They loved the Eagles. They said that wasn't going to be close. That one didn't take them long at all.
Yeah.
And it's funny. You know what's funny? When you look at the Eagles draft last year, every one of their picks was best available player. They are so stacked in almost every position. It's kind of like, oh, we're going to take the best defensive tackle in the draft just because he's there, right? They don't even – that's not a position in need. They were every pick they made was just, we're just going to load up on the most talented players that we can and you know, let them work their way into the rotation, you know, a little bit at a time. And, yeah, and then they have the Texans losing. So it was funny. They had their fantasy draft last night and there was a lot of crazy picks with just, they get players in their mind. And I think different from when we grew up, they're more loyal to players than they are teams, right? Justin Jefferson can do no wrong to these kids. Jamar Chase can do no wrong to these kids. So they're fighting over players for fantasy like we would be diehards to actual teams. So, and Jack is a diehard Bills Giants fan, right? Because he's able to do that because they don't really play against each other. But it is a different dynamic than when we grew up. It is, you know, fantasy kind of runs the world for them. So it's yeah, those are our picks. Yeah, they know imagine. More than I do, so I'll go with it.
Well, I mean, Jack is the expert, so I think ought to defer to him.
Yeah, by far. So much smarter than me.
Yeah, absolutely. Craig, do you have any comment you want to make on the 2-0 Notre Dame Fighting Irish, who have outscored their opponents by, I think it's 92 points?
No, the only thing I will give Notre Dame credit for is, well, the two things I want to bring your attention. One, go look at the clip of Max Crosby absolutely demolishing Myers in their last scrimmage as they were practicing against each other, like literally picking this poor kid up and driving him into the ground. Welcome to the NFL, Rook. I'll send that to you after if you haven't had a chance to see it.
Please do.
But two, the line to get into the game for them. Did you see that post? And it was, you know, in Dublin, the streets were just backed up for like a country mile. What a cool atmosphere that must have been, just to, you know, give folks a taste of what the game's like and, you know, really what the you know, to see that many people interested in it, and they were probably all more hammered than the next. So it was, I thought that was pretty cool. As for the team itself,
Yeah, absolutely. There were a number of my friends were at the game in Dublin and said it was just the coolest thing. So
they went?
Glad they did that. Yeah, oh yeah, a bunch of people went.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it seemed really cool. Brady Quinn was hanging out with everyone's new favorite comedian, Shane Gillis, there.
Yeah.
Which is a wild crew. Yeah, but I noticed you didn't give credit to Notre Dame for the fact that they're going on the road and playing a Power 5 game this Saturday, September 9th, which is only 21 days earlier than Michigan's first road game. Just no comment on that, right?
No, I mean, you had your run. I hope you enjoyed your two wins, because it's going to come to a screeching halt. I mean,
you've always been such a huge NC State Wolfpack guy, so I'm sure you're.
Oh, I can't see the tattoo. The way I run. But
yeah. What was that noise?
That was my Wolfpack. I don't know. Maybe it's more. Wow. I don't know. But anyway, it's a sick tattoo. Look, at the end of the day, Michigan's got 8 weeks to prepare for their first big game. So We're going to be so tight. We're going to be so ready to go by the time that first real competitive game comes along.
September 23rd, Rutgers.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
That's right.
I read that as a bye week.
That's the 1-0, the 1-0 Scarlet Knights, and still no people rested. So that's two wins.
September 23rd is shaping up to be like the biggest day in college football this year. We have Rutgers at Michigan, obviously. We have Ohio State at Notre Dame. We have Colorado at Oregon, I believe. And there's one other really big game that day, but that's like a clear your schedule, like not doing anything else, not getting off the couch type of day.
By the way,
there's going to be some good football play.
Ohio State did not look great. I mean,
they did not look like they could move the ball.
Yeah.
But I feel like we saw that at the beginning of CJ Stroud's tenure. He had that game, I think it was at Minnesota, where he just looked terrible. And then all he did was play himself into being like the number two pick in the draft. So I don't do the pronouncing Ohio State quarterbacks dead in week one thing, but I certainly don't mind that whether it's Kyle McCord or Devin Brown, their first like true big road game is going to be at Notre Dame this early in the season. I really do not mind that.
Yeah. I think this is a time, if you're going to play Ohio State, you almost don't want to play them in the middle of the season. Mm-hmm. End of the season, sometimes they succumb to a little bit of pressure, really just the last couple of years. But I think right now, if they get beat up a little bit, or at least even if they take a loss, which would be great to see, maybe the only time I ever root for Notre Dame,
that's going to be big.
I think they're going to have a hard time scraping back from that. I just don't know if they have the talent that they've had in years where they can rely just on, talent alone. I think the coaching's really got to step up, and I don't know if the coach can do it. So it's my take.
Yeah, I mean, this is coming. Receivers I've watched are like Will Fuller and Miles Boykin and Chase Claypool, but Jackson receivers that Ohio State has, and I'm like, how can this team not be really good? Now, of course, they lost, I think, both their tackles from last year. They obviously don't have Stroud. The defense lost a little bit, but like, I don't know. Marvin Harrison Jr. is still on that team. Emeka Egbuka is still there. Like they're dangerous. They're dangerous, but I see where you're coming from. And I don't mind that Notre Dame is getting them when they're getting them.
Yep. Someone's still got to get them the ball. So they better.
Absolutely.
They better hope one of these quarterbacks steps up and figures it out quick.
And I'm going to hope not. All right. As we get things wrapped up here, Glenn, any parting shots?
You missed a small little piece, Will, about Notre Dame and Rutgers. Rutgers had a larger viewership than Notre Dame did this weekend. 2.7 million.
I love that.
Watch the Rutgers Northwestern game on CBS.
I love that for the Scarlet Knights.
That makes right now Rutgers is better than Notre Dame.
I'm penciling them into my playoff picture.
Look out for the Knights.
Keynote pencil.
Craig, what should people be doing to keep up with One Club Short?
Start prepping for our next big event, which is October 3rd at Morris County Country Club. It's going to be massive. It's our last event of the season. We're going to blow this thing out. It's going to be an absolute blast. So, keep an eye out for that registration. Go to oneclubshort.com. You can find us on Instagram at oneclubshort, and follow the registration cues to get signed up. We still got a couple spots. It's only 3 weeks away, so take advantage of it. This course is awesome. It's going to be such a good time. Again, last one of the year, so we've kind of upped our game on the prizes and tee gifts. I know we got some really cool stuff in store for everybody. So hop on board.
And to be clear, that's Glen Morris County Country Club?
Yeah, I say that all the time. Morris County Country Club. Did I say Glen Morris again?
It's an homage.
No, you didn't, but I'm going to.
But I said that like 9 times when people, where's your last event? Oh, it's at Glen Morris Country Club. I do it all the time.
That's all.
Respect I deserve.
Glen's going to Glenn's going to show up and set the course record, and they're going to have to rename it anyway.
Yeah.
G. Morris.
All right, as we get things wrapped up here, Craig's got you covered. OneClubShort.com, dates, courses, registration, membership, all of that. We are at OneClubShort on Instagram. We are at OneClubShort, and then the number one on Twitter. Podcast is available wherever you get your podcast. If you're listening on Spotify, you will also get video, and the whole video podcast goes up on YouTube, where we're at OneClubShortPod. That wraps up this episode. Enjoyed it as always. We will see you again, same time, same place next week. The Irish will be 3-0, and thanks everyone for listening.